This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Amid the climate crisis, some Indigenous nations are reclaiming and rejuvenating their land. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Jason Bruff, a Northwestern Band of Shoshone Nation tribal member, about Indigenous relationships with land. Bruff, who's also a PhD candidate at the University of Maine, shares his ideas on what the rest of the world can learn from Indigenous knowledge.
Can you talk a little bit about the connection between land back and climate change and both the challenges and possibilities that, you know, it opens up?
Yeah, so Land Back is a really interesting movement trying to get Indigenous lands back to the hands of Indigenous nations. And climate change is linked to that because Indigenous communities, more often than not, when we look at the lands that they do manage or are interacting with and connected to, tend to be more rich in biodiversity. They tend to have cleaner waters. And so the two are connected in that as Indigenous nations continue to press to have autonomy over the lands that they already have and trying to get lands that were once into their possession back, they'll kind of balance each other out, have benefits not just for Indigenous communities, but for the entire nation.
And as a Shoshone person working with the Penobscot Nation in Maine, you're in a unique position to witness, you know, the diversity of Indigenous relationships to the land. And how has that shaped your perspective on climate resilience and adaptation across, you know, the different tribal nations in throughout Indian country?
Well, for me, I think the highlight of this is recognizing that no two Indigenous nations are the same. So for Shoshones, you know, we're out west where we have the Intermountain Zone, we have the Great Basin range, you know, we range down into some of the deserty areas and you know, Northern California, particularly Death Valley, versus over here with Penobscot Nation, you know, they're over here right by the coast. It's very forested. There's lots of water. And so, you know, they have very different adaptations because of these different connections to the different landscapes that are here. But there are some commonalities. We do see, again, that each nation is trying very hard to hold on to our responsibilities, not just to human beings, but to plants, to animals, to the water, to the soil. We want to save ourselves, but we also want to save everything that comes along with it.
You know, anthropology and archaeology haven't always been maybe inclusive or some would maybe even say respectful of Indigenous worldviews. Why do you think it's important to center, you know, Indigenous voices in these fields today?
Yeah, so historically, archaeology and anthropology have been very kind of antagonistic towards Indigenous communities. It's really important for Indigenous nations and communities to continue to assert our own voice and our autonomy, in particular in these fields, because no one can really know our communities like we know ourselves. You know, anthropology in particular, you know, they like to go in and collect ethnographies and the like. And those can be important. They can be beneficial to communities, but only when it's done by, with, and for Indigenous communities. And I can kind of serve not just as a mediator between the two, but push the boundaries and get the archaeologists to start thinking outside the box. And that's what I'm really looking forward to with the uprising Indigenous archaeologists, Indigenous anthropologists. They're doing all of that kind of work.
And that kind of leads up into my next question too, with Indigenous knowledge. And, you know, it's often talked about as ancient, but, you know, it's also adaptive and evolving. How are you seeing Indigenous communities, you know, innovate and respond to the climate crisis today using both traditional and modern practices?
We've been here for a very long time. We've gone through climate change before, from the bitter cold to the sudden warming to floods. So we're very well adapted to understanding, okay, this could happen and this is how we can approach that. I mean, we know from our old traditions, you know, what we did that worked. The key point to understand is that Indigenous peoples are not the cause of our current climate crisis. And, you know, we're trying our best to do our part for this, but we can't do it alone. And we need to have our non-Indigenous kin, you know, being able to step up to the plate. Penobscot Nation here does a really great job, you know, investing in the youth. They build up their youth and get them proud of who they are. Because I think one of the key things that we need for our youth today is to be proud of who they are again, to have that knowledge that our ancestors weren't primitive people of the past, that they were very technologically sophisticated. Some of the world's top pharmacologists, you know, they were some of the world's best architects, you know, ecologists. I think those things will help our peoples, and not just our peoples, but again, even our non-Indigenous kin who are here, if they could start to think things through, it'll benefit both parties.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.